Members, at this time I'm going to convene our meeting. I hope all members received the revised schedule for today. We did reduce the schedule by one bill. We still do have the basement hearing room blocked off for this afternoon if needed. My hope is, and looking at today's schedule, my hope is, of course, that it won't be needed, especially with the weather warnings coming in, although Representative Pulowski did offer me the use of his couch if necessary. And you have a cribbage board also, Representative Pulowski?
No, but this will cost you quite a bit in legislation.
But I do believe that we should, we'll do everything we can to get through the agenda this morning, and then we won't need to reconvene this afternoon. Members, we do have a quorum. I call the meeting officially to order at this time. We will start with House File 1454, Representative Eastland, but we might be a little flexible with the schedule as we move forward this morning. Representative Eastland, welcome. If you would, please move your bill.
Do I move it, sir, or what?
Yes, Representative Eastland.
I'd like to move. What are we going to do with it?
Representative Eastland moves that House File 1454 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance.
Thank
Representative Eastland, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Committee, I'm going to use the Dabney principle this morning, the KISS principle. Keep it simple, sir. And that keeps our gender straight, too, in the committee here. So, but this the bill that we're looking at this morning is basically a bill that enables districts to pull together and form administrative districts for efficiency. I had one testifier that was scheduled to come. I was going to keep the testimony short, and it's going to be shorter because he just called and has a family emergency. So what I'm going to do is just quickly go through the bill. I have an amendment that's going to change it slightly and hopefully simplify it according to the principle that we're talking about.
Representative Eastland, let's move the amendment so we can get the bill in the shape that you'd like it. Members, in your packet, there should be an A3 amendment. Representative Eastland, would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, I will move the A3 amendment, sir.
Representative Eastland moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Eastland, do you have an oral amendment also?
I also have an oral amendment, sir. It is on page 6 of the bill.
Mm-hmm. Members, if we would turn to page 6 of the bill as amended, Representative Eastland.
And Ms. Larson can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it would be after board.
On which line, Representative?
Line 2.
On line 2.
After board, strike the word and insert. Ms. Larson, you better do this.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on House File 1454, page 6, line 2, delete and insert a comma. Page 6, line 3, after the word board, insert and the approval of the commissioner. Oh, I'm sorry. And the commissioner. No, because it's upon approval.
Does everybody have that oral amendment? Are there any questions? But Ms. Larson, why don't you repeat that amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, page 6, line 2, delete and, insert a comma, page 6, line 3, after the word board, insert and the commissioner, so that the phrase would read, upon approval by a majority vote of a district school board, the education administrative district, and the commissioner.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Eastland, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just going through the bill quickly, I'm just going to point out a few things. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. This is a bill that's just designed to help school districts gain some efficiencies by pooling their resources and as they purchase administrative services. First of all, the first section talks a little bit about an administrative district and how it is formed. Amendment that we just passed deleted subdivision 3. One of the criticisms of the bill was that there was a lot of prescription in how these districts would be formed, and so what we did basically is change the bill with this amendment to allow school boards to make that decision how they would be configured. There would be no geographic constrictions. There would be no school or student number constrictions. It's simply if districts can get together and demonstrate that they can create efficiencies and they want to enter this kind of an agreement, they can do it with the approval of the commissioner. So it's a good local control direction of movement here. So that's basically the first section. The second section of the bill is on page 3. It talks about the administrative districts and how they function, and it establishes the board. Each administrative district will have a board. The board will be made up of members from each of the participating school districts, and section 2 talks about how that board functions. The board will be required to produce an annual report that will go to the commissioner that will demonstrate that there is economic savings. And then we go to the last section of the bill talks about the agreement itself. One of the things that we changed in this section with the amendment was subdivision 2 on page 4. One of the concerns of the school administrators in the state was that this could create kind of a very quick changeover of administrative leadership. So what we did is, in the amendment, is we allowed this administrative district 2 years before it would have to actually come together under one administrative head. Every administrative district will eventually have one superintendent that they will share, but they have 2 years to make that happen, a transition period, which is helpful to transitioning staff in and out of the district. The last thing I want to mention is on page 5. It's the levy authority. That's always of concern. There's levy authority in this bill, and levy authority is only for the transition period. It's for the first 3 years. It's for startup costs, and after that, there has to be demonstrated savings, and there should be no additional need for funds. So that is basically the bill. If there are questions of a technical nature, we have some people from the department. Other questions I could maybe answer.
All right. Thank you, Representative Eastland. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Easton, I like the changes that you made. They're a vast improvement over the governor's proposal. In particular, if you turn to page 6, line number 3, when you deleted an adjoining school districts, you made it possible for school districts to jump over regional centers, et cetera, and that I see is playing very well, you know, out in rural Minnesota. Otherwise, you're going to have the attempt at regional centers to come in and take over all these small little school districts. They would have no choice. But anyways, I see that as the major obstacle I had with it last time. There's some good changes here, and I thank you for that. And I think with this bill, there is, at least out my area of the country, there's opportunity for school districts that are already looking at doing that. I know I have BBE and Minnewaska looking at sharing superintendents right now. And I can see Atwater and some other ones perhaps coming in this scenario. But what it also does, we had Superintendent Alexandria that testified this committee a couple weeks ago and talked about the high cost that Osakis and some of those have with administration. 4.9, some at 5.3, total cost of operation was administration. This will bring those numbers down considerably, free up monies for classroom teachers. At the same time, what's going to happen, we also had the issue with open enrollment brought up out there in rural Minnesota. What's going to happen is, Representative Marquardt, in your district, you have certain towns, small towns, will probably have 4 school districts going through a little town. Now they have the opportunity of getting together and redoing their transportation routes as well. It's going to be just a major, it's an opportunity to do some major reforms, at least out in rural Minnesota. So I appreciate that, Representative Eastland.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from the committee? Right. Representative Eastland, I have nobody who's called in to testify to this bill, but I will ask right now if there's anybody in the audience who'd like to testify to this bill. Seeing none, I have one question, Representative Eastland. Do you believe that administrators are overpaid and underworked? No, that's rhetorical.
What if I would like to answer that? I'd like Mr. Heitzer to answer that question.
The chair would consider weighing the bill over for future consideration. But seeing no further questions, Representative Eastland renews his motion that House File 1454, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to K-12 Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. The bill is passed on. Thank you, Representative Eastland. Members, at this time I'm going to move a little bit on the agenda, and I'm going to ask Representative Greiling if she is ready. All right. Thank you. Representative Greiling, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think I'd ask my witness to come down right away because I'm going to be real brief. First, I would move, Mr. Chair, do you want this to go to Finance? I'd move House File 60 to be recommended to go to House File or to Education Finance.
Representative Greiling moves that House File 60 be recommended to pass and be referred to K-12 Finance. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Charter schools, when we first started them in Minnesota as the first state, needed a place to have requests appealed because a lot of school boards were new to this and not so sure that they wanted to get involved in this. We didn't have as many sponsors. And so charter schools were referred for appeal if they could, if they'd been refused by the school boards, to the State Board of Education. As some of you remember, we abolished that, and then the fallback was appealing to the commissioner. I've always wondered about that fit because you have the education department regulating but also sponsoring some charter schools. And so now that we've kind of come of age, I would like this bill then says the commissioner would no longer sponsor anymore. She could keep the ones that she is sponsoring, and it would be phased in, taking effect on January 1st, 2007. So in case there's any schools in the pipeline, they don't get cut off at the pass. And Mr. Chair, my witness is Mr. Ted Coldry, who is certainly a Minnesota, but also a national and international, for all I know, guru on charter schools. And I'll let him further introduce himself.
Mr. Coldry, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ted Coldry. I'm a senior associate with Education Evolving, which is a small policy group in St. Paul. We don't have much to add to what Representative Greiling said. I think that there was a time when the state approval was essential. There was a point at which the state was the only alternate sponsor. There was also a need at the beginning, at the time when there was a cap on the total number of schools permitted, and when districts were the sponsors for some entities, central entities, simply to keep count of the number of schools approved to be sure that the district's individual actions didn't in total exceed the cap. With the removal of the cap, the need for that counting function has disappeared. The legislature has, of course, in subsequent years provided a number of alternate sponsoring authorities. So this is, in a way, as we see it, a cleaning up of the sponsoring function in the direction of having the state generate sponsors and the sponsors then be responsible for generating schools. It's one of a number of useful clarifications and improvement in the whole sponsoring activity that packages before you this year, and we would encourage you to act favorably on Representative Grayling's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Coldrey. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Two questions, Representative Grayling. This bill has been introduced quite a while ago. Have you had any contact at all from the Department of Education?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did ask Morgan Brown about it way back when we had the press conference with Senator Kelly and myself and others, the bipartisan charter school press conference, and I think they took a while to think about it because of all the other things on their plate. But a couple weeks ago, when we were going to have this hearing and then it got rescheduled, the same gentleman told me they were neutral on it.
Okay. Thank you. Question to Mr. Coldrey. Earlier this session, this committee passed and referred to K-12 finance, a bill brought to us by Representative Dean, which created up to 5 single-purpose charter school sponsors. Does this piece of legislation and that go hand-in-hand in your mind, or are they completely independent of each other?
Mr. Chairman, I would think that the legislature would want to keep both in view and relate them to each other. As I indicated in my testimony, part of the reason for relieving the department of the responsibility now is as a result of the presence of other competent sponsors, again, with the notion of the state generating enough sponsors to sponsor schools.
Thank you. Representative Grayling, any further comments?
No, Mr. Chair, other than, of course, I have one more. Ohio is and other states, I don't know if others are or not, but Ohio, I'm aware, and that's part of what we were discussing and why this bill came up, and I was having coffee with Mr. Coldrey last summer, is that they're doing the same thing, except that they're having an 18-month period for the commissioner to actually find other sponsors for all the ones that the commissioner is sponsoring. But I thought this was a smaller step than just, you know, stop having more, and then probably over time I would imagine the department would encourage the ones that they're sponsoring to find other sponsors, as there are more sponsors to be had.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no further questions, at this time, Representative Grayling renews her motion that House File 60 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to K-12 Finance. Representative Heidkirchen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to be I was very astonished. Your 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th, and 11th, and 12th words were very true. You said, I'm going to be very brief. And Representative Grayling, I didn't think it was possible. Congratulations.
Thank you, Representative Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heidkirchen. You and I have the same problem.
Members, we have a motion before the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No.
Thank you, Representative Grayling. Representative Mariani is not here. Representative Demmer, if you would please. Members, we're reverting back on the agenda to House File. We'll just make it right now. I'll make it. Uh-huh. Representative Demmer, welcome. Would you move your bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. My bill is House File 1718. It's not a new bill for those of us who are back. I had this last year in the 2004 session. essentially what House File 270...
Representative Demmer,
if I could please.
Representative Demmer moves House File 1718 to be placed before the committee. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1718 prohibits a school board from entering into an agreement that would limit the superintendent's duties to assign or reassign either teachers or administrators. This proposal, this bill, is actually supported by MSBA and the School Board Association, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, and the Minnesota Association of School Principals. All think this is important legislation. Members, this bill is not about control. It's not about power. It's not about trying to one-up anybody. As a business person, I think efficient and effective use of staff is probably the best and most important thing you can do in any kind of organization, and that's what this is about, in my opinion. Processes that we have for choosing teacher assignments, such as lottery drawings and seniority, oftentimes, and quite frankly, I'd submit most of the time, really have no bearing on what's best for teaching kids within a district or even in a building. I think the schools hire a superintendent because they have ability to lead and utilize resources and staff that will provide the best learning environment and ultimately the best educational experience for the kids in that district. Some districts, such as rural districts that I represent, it's not really a big deal because you have one building and maybe two or three or four sections of kids, and assigning teachers is not really a bigger issue. Some districts, however, that have multiple school sites, multiple buildings, located in many different geographic and socioeconomic areas, staffing can become an extremely important and a big issue. Matching teacher expertise and experience with the needs of kids can mean a big difference in the learning environment and whether kids move forward or not. I think that superintendents will work with teachers and maximize the balancing act that we always have of where they want to be with maybe where they should be. That's why I offered the bill, and I urge your support. Now, with that, I do have a couple of people here to testify, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer, I have a list of a number of people who have called in to testify, both in favor and against, and I'm going to call them simply in the order that they've been listed in front of me. So at this time, can I also, Mr. Aronson, please come forward? Mr. Aronson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Roger Aronson. I represent the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, the Elementary Principals Association, and then I also serve as the executive director of the Minneapolis Principals Forum, and we're happy to be here with Representative Demmer this morning on this bill. You did hear this bill last year, and we brought a few Minneapolis principals who are on your list as well that you're going to hear from. I wanted just to give you a bit of an outline in the same fashion that Representative Demmer has about this bill. There are some things that are appropriate topics of negotiation. What teachers' compensation is, what their health insurance is, what their sick leave might be, but which teachers should be in which buildings in a particular school district, we believe, is not a proper subject of negotiation. We think that school administrators and school superintendents should have the right and the responsibility to make the assignments of teachers into the most appropriate site. We don't have that in Minneapolis. Minneapolis, we have a long, complicated system that takes us days because teachers have a contractual right into particular sites. If school administrators and officials have decided that a particular teacher could do more help for students in another site, we're contractually prohibited from doing this. It's unfortunate that this got into this contract. We can't seem to get it out. Anoka doesn't have this. St. Paul doesn't have this. Rochester doesn't have this. And as Representative Demers pointed out to you, in small school districts where you don't have these multiple sites, it isn't a problem. But the reason that we bring this forward is the school principals in Minneapolis are convinced that this could significantly assist in student achievement. And that's why we're here, Mr. Chair. And I'd answer any questions you might have.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Aronson, if you would make yourself available, we'll take questions after all testimony. Can I ask that Ms. Joan Franks please come to the table? Mm-hmm. Ms. Franks, welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the record and then give us your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Joan Franks, and I am the principal at Armitage Montessori and Community School, as well as Kenny Community School in Minneapolis. The two buildings are about a mile apart, and they're located in southwest Minneapolis. I'm here today because I have a strong passion about this particular topic. Each year in the spring, Minneapolis goes through what is considered a grueling process where we deal with the budget, and inevitably it impacts the schools in terms of teacher assignments in the building. The way the process works right now is that if, for instance, this spring I may lose two or three teachers in the school, the teachers have to be laid off based on seniority, and I am left then to go to a bidding process. The positions are posted, and up to 10 people at a time can interview for the position based on their seniority. So the 10 most interested, or the 10 teachers with the most, the highest seniority have the opportunity to interview with my committee. That would be great, except that we have no ability to select which of those teachers comes to the school. It's based on their seniority. So if the most senior person decides that she or he wants to come into the school, we basically have no way to keep that person from coming if they have the licensure. And what I would say is that at Armitage and Kenny, I am very, very blessed to have phenomenal teachers. First and second year teachers who would knock your socks off with how fantastic they are. Equally so, I have teachers at the other end of the continuum, and actually one of the teachers I have is going to be the most senior teacher in Minneapolis this year. I would go to my death to keep her. She is absolutely phenomenal. But the point being that this year when I lose some of my teachers, I will have no say as to the people who come back into the building. One of the things that is crucial when you are working with staff is that you have, first of all, best fit, but you also are able to create teams of people who have the same philosophy, the same ideas, and the same direction that they want with kids. We have no ability to do that right now. Schools are expected to have continuity and consistency in their mission and vision, the implementation of instructional strategies, a school-wide focus for staff development, succession planning in order to maintain some continuity and consistency with the kids, getting parents involved in the community, and most importantly, improving test scores. We have no ability to control that in our schools right now because we have no ability to control who comes in and out of our buildings. There is nothing about best fit, educational experiences, continuing education, personal skills, or even a passion for a particular assignment when it comes to our current system in Minneapolis. Can you imagine going in for heart surgery and being told that you're going to get the most senior surgeon, not the best surgeon? How many of us would turn over our hard-earned dollars to the oldest or most senior financial advisor versus the best? It just wouldn't work in our lives, and we don't want it to work that way for our kids. Please don't misunderstand my passion. There are many highly qualified and talented teachers in Minneapolis who should be in the schools. As I said earlier, I have what will be the most senior teacher. However, two years ago, I lost an African-American male teacher who absolutely impacted that school and community like nothing I can describe. The parents were in love with him. The kids worshipped him. His attendance rate in the school was absolutely phenomenal, the best in the building, because everybody wanted to be with Omar. Everybody wanted to be with him. I lost him to the Richfield Public School. What I've heard is that they absolutely are thrilled that I lost him because they now have what is the best teacher. So I'm not saying that it is the most senior or the least senior that we believe need to be removed from the buildings or not be allowed to stay in a building. We want the best fit for our building. One Minneapolis principal, in talking to him about this, said, possibly what we could do, a possible solution, and granted it would need probably a lot of tweaking, is to each year, if we have to lay off teachers in a building, allow the principal and or site team to figure out which person might not be the best fit for the school. That teacher would maintain their contract or perhaps go into a cadre of reserve teachers who would move throughout the school district providing support when teachers are out absent. It's not maybe the perfect solution, but allows them to maintain a contract that allows the buildings to keep the continuity and consistency we need for our kids. Over the past few years, educators nationwide have been forced to deal with the No Child Left Behind umbrella that dictates student achievement based on standardized tests as the single most important criteria for determining the success of the school. If, in fact, achievement of students is directly related to instruction, and instruction is directly related to the skills of teachers, it only seems logical that we would want to put the best and most consistent teachers in the building with our kids. Currently, our system in Minneapolis is a revolving door that provides the inability for any continuity of instruction by grade-level teams beyond a 9-month period. I have one grade level in particular that has now changed teachers 5 times in the last 5 years. How can long-term planning even be a discussion item? Can you imagine Honeywell, IBM, American Express, Target Corporation, or any other successful business changing their most crucial employees every 9 months? It doesn't work for business, and it doesn't work for our schools. As schools continue to work tirelessly to ensure that every student reaches their fullest potential, we need the flexibility and ability to ensure that every staff member who works with the children not only has the licensure to work in the building, but has something less tangible, and that's the passion and skills to work within that community and that school. You know, quite often when we go through the bidding process, people come to the bid and they don't know where the school is located. They don't necessarily know anything about the community or the passion of that school. Not to say that they're not effective teachers, but they're there because they want that job for whatever reason, maybe the location of the school. What we as Minneapolis principals are begging, imploring, pleading to you for is support in allowing us to keep continuity and consistency in our buildings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Franks, for your testimony. Mr. Steve Couture. Welcome to our committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Stephen Couture. I'm a principal at Washburn High School in Minneapolis. I'm also the president of the Minneapolis Principals Forum. I'm here just to say a short thing and to support my colleague, Ms. Franks. We think that this is a good bill. I joined the principal ranks in Minneapolis almost 20 years ago. The current system, the bidding system, was in place 20 years ago. Well, the trend of education has changed drastically in the last 20 years. And one of the reasons, or the big reason we're supporting this system, because we think we need more opportunity to place the right teachers in the right positions. As this system has played out, what we're finding is that the least senior teachers tend to be placed in the schools with the greatest challenges. Once they achieve tenure, they seem to move out to schools that don't have the same challenges. We think it's time for a fresh start, to start over, to build some flexibility into how teachers are placed in schools. And we need to do that in a responsible way. But the current system, I think, is outdated and is, frankly, holding the system back. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Couture. Could I ask, there's a representative from Ed Minnesota, Jan, if you would, please. Welcome, Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. And if the chair would allow, I would request that Rose Hermanson from the Minneapolis Teachers join because our testimony will fit together.
That'd be perfectly acceptable, Ms. Hermanson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I welcome this debate. I think that this is a very complex subject, a very complex law, and I think that there is a simple fix that is being attempted here, and I really want you to think about the consequences. It's a statewide mandate to a perceived problem. You're only hearing about one district here at this point, and I don't know if there will be others here or not. But this isn't the right fix. And this is a body that generally talks about local control. What you are saying is that there can be no local control here in local decision because the superintendent would be the only person who would have control. I kind of jokingly call it the ultimate authority for superintendents. And no one else really has authority to help make a decision. There appears to be a number of assumptions that are not accurate. First of all, there's an assumption that contracts benefit teachers in regards to transfer. And I know at least a couple of you are very familiar with one particular district where I used to teach. If I wanted to transfer, clearly I had no choice to go where I wanted to go, and it was totally up to the principal. And we had open window periods, etc. It was all laid out. All teachers knew what the process was. All administrators knew what the process was. And it was in the hands of the principal. That is an agreement. You would be saying that you could not have an agreement, even if it was restrictive to teachers. There's also a feeling that agreements will lead to bad decisions. As I have experienced life and have talked in this body and over in the Senate, agreements are generally good things. Discussions usually lead to compromise and solutions that benefit both parties, or at least so that people understand the issue and the problems. We are also assuming inaccurately that each district has the same needs. Representative Demmer talked about a district where you might have one or two buildings, and then we have districts that have 25 elementaries, 6 middle schools, 3 high schools. One decision doesn't fit every single school district. There are some unintended consequences. You know, I've said jokingly to the superintendents, be careful what you ask for, you might just get it. Think about this. In the district that I talked to you about, where actually the contract is restricted for teachers, now that agreement is gone. You could not have an agreement in a contract. You couldn't have a letter of understanding. Now that superintendent is at the political whim of the parents and the teachers, the employees. I wouldn't want to be in that situation, because right now that contract is restrictive for the employees. I would think you'd find some uprising and some organizing. Agreements are good. They help you decide at the local level. You don't even have to have an agreement. If you didn't pass this, you wouldn't even have to have an agreement. The superintendent could still make that decision. They can be designed to fit the size, the demographics, and the needs of the district. They can be short-term. They can be long-term. And I will repeat again, this is a complex subject. There are other possibilities to the situations that you're talking about. This is not the right fix for the issue that you were talking about. And Education Minnesota strongly opposes this bill. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. Ms. Hermanson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rose Hermanson. I'm here representing the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers. You are currently receiving a handout, which is describing the process for transfer and realignment in Minneapolis. This is a document that was worked out jointly between the Human Relations Department and the Federation. It was worked out last year as they were going through the process of layoffs and bidding. And fundamentally, this was a joint piece that was worked out with the school district based on the contractual arrangement. I'd like to start out by saying fundamentally that we view our relationship with the district as a partnership. And that partnership, we seek to address the issues of our members, but also meet the needs of the students. We take this responsibility very seriously. And as an example of that, I would just like to share with you that the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers settled their contracts before the beginning of the school, or maybe just in the first month, 7 out of the last 10 contracts. So we worked very hard to have our contracts in place at the beginning of the school year so that there's stability for the students as well as our staff. Part of that contract since the early 1980s has been language on transfer and reassignment. I probably should, just for purpose of disclosure, say that my kids went to Armitage School for their entire education, elementary education. I know she had an Armitage principal here, so that's where my kids went to school when they were in Minneapolis. But having said that, I'm very familiar with the Armitage School. Our goal in this transfer and reassignment process is to have a workable, fair process that addresses the needs. If you look at what's laid out in the handout, this is very complex, as Ms. Allswager laid out. The district must set the budget. They must determine how many positions are available. They then send those budgets to individual schools. And in listening to the previous testimony, I think we're getting some of the layoff procedure confused with the transfer and reassignment procedure, and that's actually handled in another statute. But I will go back to the transfer and reassignment. This is how it works. There is not unilateral decision-making here. It was an agreement reached with the board. The sites have some say in who comes into their positions. And in that agreement, as you read through this document, the principal must sign off on the staff that comes to their site. Now, there are some other things, as I found out this morning, in this transfer and reassignment agreement with the district. There is a provision for fresh start for schools, and that's been utilized, where they have to go in and rebuild a school because of the needs of those students. So the Federation is not insensitive to addressing those needs and have worked this out with the school district. A second provision in that transfer and reassignment language allows a school to submit a plan, and they have the right to select a teacher or teams of teachers to come in and meet the needs of their students. To date, that's been in the contract for 4 years, and to date, no principal or school site has utilized that plan to utilize that part of the contract to say, we have needs here, this is our plan, and we would like more senior experienced teachers, or we would like those types of teachers. This is very complex. It is something that's been worked out locally and in attempts to address the need. Now, I'm not at liberty at this point. This document I've shared with you is in the process of being reworked again based on the needs of the district. And the teachers in the district are working on a memorandum of understanding. The main goal is to help speed up the process a little bit, because that became problematic last year with all the layoffs. And they are attempting to address these needs. It is an agreement between the teachers and the district. And at this point, I think the district has worked very cooperatively with us, and we have attempted to be cooperative in meeting their needs. We think this should be handled locally, and we would urge you not to adopt House File 1718. One other piece, there was a report by the Human Resources Department. I'll share it with you if you would like. I've given it to Representative Demmer, and we appreciate you visiting with us. There's been the greatest stability in some of the most high-need schools in Minneapolis this past year based on the realignment process that's been worked out. Again, we will continue our goal to meet the needs of the kids while protecting our staff, but not do that solely without discussing those needs with the district and attempting to address what they say are these issues. And that's with the school board and the superintendent. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, ladies. And there are questions, but we'll pick them up after all testimony. Ms. Carla Bates, is Ms. Bates in attendance? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my name is Carla Bates, and I just want to say a moment here. It's very interesting. My perception of the problem is very much like Principal Frank's, and my solution is very much like the person from the union that we just heard. So, let's play fruit basket upset. All right. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Carla Bates, and I'm here today to voice my concern regarding House File 1718. From my perspective as a parent, this bill would hurt rather than help our school board's ability to make sure the right teachers are in the right schools to best educate our children. I'm a parent of three children, first, third, and sixth grades, who attend Seward Montessori, a public Montessori within the Minneapolis public school system. This is my second year as the chair of the Seward Parent Group, and I've served on the site management team for the past 5 years. Seward's test scores are great, and the success of our school is due to the passion of the parents, the energy of the kids, and the professionalism of our teachers. For many reasons, many Minneapolis public schools have endured awful turnovers in staff. We've had funding problems which have led to layoffs, but you're helping with that this session. We've had problems with planning for declining enrollments, but the Minneapolis public schools are now closing schools and focusing our resources. And we've had problems because of labor agreements that have become outdated and need to be renegotiated. And you're helping us with that by considering House File 1180. That would make it very clear to everyone that even seniority is on the table. Minneapolis parents are organizing to demand more teacher stability, more site-based control. Minneapolis parents are organizing, writing our school board, lobbying our legislatures, pushing our principals, holding public forums to demand that the district and the union negotiate a contract that will change the rules regarding staff assignments and seniority. The contract must ensure that not only are the best teachers recruited, but they are assigned to the right schools and that they are retained. If there are teachers who are doing a great job in our high poverty schools, they should not be laid off in favor of someone who happens to be more senior. If a teacher has Montessori certification and is doing a great job, they should not be bumped from our Montessori school by a more senior staff person with no certification. If a team of third grade teachers are working wonders with a group of struggling readers, the team should not be broken up because one of them is not senior enough to be retained. The single most important factor to me about my child's education is who their classroom teacher is. Our school board, with the guidance of our superintendent and our teachers union, can forge a contract that ensures staffing stability and that provides principals with the staff they need to get the job done for all of our children. We need the legislature to not tie the hands of parents by tying the hands of our school board. The school board are our elected representatives. They need the power to forge contracts that meet the needs of the kids and respect the professionalism of the teachers. Parents have the power to hold the school board accountable. That's the power in the system, and that's where it needs to lay. Hold off on House File 718 until parents and teachers, truly the most important people in a kid's life, have a chance to work it out in our daily lives and at the bargaining table. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Bates. Appreciate it. Sir, Superintendent Williams in the office, audience? Superintendent Williams, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed to give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Williams, and I'm the superintendent of schools in Rochester. Representative Demmer has asked me to share my experiences working in a district that has the right of assignment of all employees, including teachers and administrators. As a background, I have been a building principal, a director of human resources, and now superintendent in the Rochester district. I've dealt with this matter all 18 years that I have been in Rochester. Do we have to use this right of assignment often? No, not at all. When we've had to, though, we have worked very clearly within licensure of the individuals and the needs of the building, especially the students. The language in all of our bargaining contracts clearly indicates that the district does have the right of assignment of personnel. We have an agreement that does not stand in the way of a building doing what's in the best interest of the students that attend that building. In our teacher's contract, besides this language, as in most contracts in the state, we also have transfer language that works very well. But most importantly, within that transfer language, a building administrator does have the right to make sure that the person who wants to transfer to that building voluntarily is the best fit for that building. All this whole process, particularly when it gets into emergency transfers, can literally occur within a couple days. And I think that's the key, to have the authority and the agility to quickly respond to meet the needs of the student. And that's why we're all there. I give credit to those who have preceded me, especially in human resources and the Rochester bargaining units, for having language that allows the district to do this, but to do it responsibly. As I indicated, it has been used very sparingly, that selection when somebody is denied coming to a building. But most importantly, when it has been needed to maintain some consistency within the building and get the right fit for the students there, it has been used responsibly when needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Williams. The last person I have on the list of testifiers is Sir Dr. Johnson in the audience. Dr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and share with us your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Lowry Johnson. I'm a retired Minneapolis public school principal. I was in the school district for 32 years, fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to take this. I was part of the first bidding session some 20-some years ago. That was our first bidding session back in the 80s and 81. The purpose of that bidding session was for the building principals to get the staff to meet the needs of the building, the mission and the vision of that building. That went real well. However, over the evolution of years, the bidding process is outdated, really. It's antiquated. You might say, you know, should have gone out with the dinosaurs, 19 years ago. The building principals, as you have heard, absolute need to have some flexibility in the building to bring in teachers that they feel through interview or through past knowledge or through their knowledge of them working with youngsters in the building. They need that flexibility to bring in those teachers to meet that building need. Now, the buildings, there's a lot of challenges put on the buildings now. No school, no child left behind. That's a tremendous challenge on buildings now. So the principals need to be able to meet those needs. Also, being able to keep staff in the building for a period of 5, 6 or more years is very crucial to building principals to meet their needs. Oftentimes, with the reduction of budget, teachers, etc., the building might lose a teacher because of being excess. If a teacher is excess, then we go through the process of this bidding process. The bidding process may take days, months, literally. The building does not have a full staff at the beginning of the school because of the bidding process. If a teacher leaves voluntarily, the principal has more leeway at that time to select the principal whom he or she feels is needed for that building. Now, even though I'm a retired principal, I've been back and forth in the district for a number of years, either working with first, second, third year principals or in the area office working with the superintendent. So I am aware. In fact, I have gone back to the building, to the district as a building principal, as a substitute building principal. So I am aware of the difficulties and the need for some consistency in staffing. it got to be the point where it's a rule of seniority, not the rule of student achievement and accomplishment. Let's see. The other point I'd like to make is that oftentimes principals are strapped with weak teachers. I'm not saying that all teachers are weak, and I certainly feel that the union has the right to protect the most senior teachers. But these teachers, if you get them in the building and they're weak, it's very difficult to get them out of the building. And you might say, have I done this? Yes. I've terminated teachers and whatnot. But it's very difficult to do that because of the seniority right. And oftentimes these teachers get in the building, if the principal put a little pressure on them to improve, working with them in the classroom, getting some sports and getting them help, and there's no change in their ability to work with the students they have, then they can be into another building. Oftentimes, poor teachers get hidden by being able to be into another building. They do this over a period of time, and once they get seniority, they're there. And they're continually in the classroom, and they're not helping the students at all. They haven't done anything for the student, mainly because of this seniority. I'm not knocking seniority. I think we should have seniority. But I'm also saying that building principals should have that flexibility to go out and get those teachers that they need. Let me give you an example. One of the buildings that I was assigned to, the problems with the staffing and most certainly the academics of that building. The superintendent asked me to go out and get that thing straightened out. But my hands were tired. So at that point in time, I was able to draw in, you might say, recruit staff to come into the building. They bought into the concept of what we had to do to improve the academic skills of that building. We were there for 6 or 7 years, and our achievements over a period of time hit the top of the school district achievement. That was brought to me by being able to go out, bring staff in, select them, and have some control over the input of staff. I think the principals made a good point, so I won't jump over what they're saying because we need this bill to be passed.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Johnson. We have a couple of people that have questions, so I'll ask you to hang tight. We have one more testifier, and then I'm going to call you back to the table at that time. Assistant Commissioner Nelson. Assistant Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Marianne Nelson. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Education at the Department of Education. Thank you. I will only hit a couple of points that were made given that the testimony has gone on. This bill provides for a decision-making process about which teachers are assigned to which building, and this process works already successfully in over 300 school districts in Minnesota. This Minneapolis provision, and there are a few other districts that have similar provision, extends legally given seniority rights far beyond what is already in law. Instead of seniority, the Minneapolis contract calls for management, and using seniority, the Minneapolis contract ties the hands of principals, and they have talked to you about this. This language in Representative Demmer's bill would instead hold management accountable to determine what teacher assignments are best. Every teacher has skills. Every teacher has something to offer. And when a principal can interview a teacher and determine what's that grade level team composition, what would be best for that school, what is that teacher's skills and preparation, how do I make the best assignment for my school so that our kids can learn? And I might tell you, as I testify, I'm a superintendent who's worked for 9 years with those very given requirements. No superintendent is above the law. Every superintendent reports to a school board. And when there's ever a complaint from a parent, that goes right to the school board. If there's a complaint about a principal decision, it goes to the school board. That's what we call line authority. That's what holds people who manage our schools accountable in a way that is direct. A union contract that calls for the decision based on a union feature is anonymous. Parents don't know where to go when it's in a union contract. I'll tell you a story, my final point. At an AYP conference last year, we hold conferences in the department where we deliver resource help to schools. And this happened to be a conference with many principals of schools that were in significant trouble with achievement. These principals were caring, hardworking, and they said to me, "We pray this provision passes. It will solve 80% of our problems. We want stability in our teams. We want to be able to keep our kids with the same stable, caring teachers. But this bidding process has gone far beyond what is already guaranteed in law and has required us to accept teachers into the building that maybe don't work, don't fit, and they are saying they have a fruit basket upset every year." This language would take care of that. Is it a simple fix, as was said earlier? Yes, it's a very simple fix, which makes it so attractive to the principals who have asked for your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. This time I'd ask that the questioner for Ms. Elsweiger is gone, so she may come back. So if you hang tight, Dr. Johnson, if you could return to the table. Assistant Commissioner, at this time we'll call you back if we need, if there's somebody who has a question specifically for you, but we have two people who have questions for Dr. Johnson. I'll begin with Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Dr. Johnson.
Good morning.
I needed to check out a couple of the I think both explicit and implicit pieces to your testimony, so if I could. You stated that if an opening is created through a voluntary retirement, transfer, whatever, that the principal has more latitude.
Somewhat. The thing there is that after interviewing, principal views his or her gut feeling whether or not this particular teacher is suited for the program in the building. If not, the principal has an obligation to write a statement and refute the acceptance of that teacher. However, the teacher can file a grievance against the principal and saying, "I deserve," or whatever issue in the agreement, and it goes through the long process of hearing the grievance. Oftentimes, that position, if it's a long grievance, that position is left unsupported. So we'll have to bring in a substitute teacher or change some of the students in that classroom to give them to other teachers if they accept the load.
Representative Fagney.
Chair, Dr. Johnson. It sounds from what the other principals were saying, what you're saying, then, if I'm hearing it, that the greatest problem is in the event of layoffs. For maintaining stability in schools when there's layoffs going on in the district because of either declining enrollment, declining funding, or...
That's only a part of it. Layoff is only a part of it. There might be a teacher who's weak. I also failed to mention, I was on the staff a faculty at St. Cloud State working with supervising student teachers. If you get a weak teacher coming into a building, oftentimes it's the youngest teacher with no experience, have not had any experience teaching in the inner city schools, dealing with students of color. Their only experience have been with other students like and look like themselves. And when they come into a building where you have the diversity of students, they seem to not know how to deal. They're not culturally astute with those students. And this might be a problem. And if that's the case, then there's no way that you can, other than giving that teacher support and help, that's no way to replace that student with a teacher who has experience, who's worked in inner city schools, who's worked with students of color, who know that you cannot put a student in one single box and everything fits her. Did that answer your question?
Well, Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, maybe this is a better question for Representative Demmer than for Dr. Johnson. I'm getting increasingly confused as this conversation goes on, because we seem to be intertwining a number of issues. I'm hearing Dr. Johnson struggle with the difficulty in getting rid of poor quality teachers, and I think the other principals referenced that. Representative Demmer, does this bill impact PELRA and teachers' due process rights in any way?
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, I don't think so. This
Mr.
bill
Chair?
Is...
Representative Dabney.
Representative Demmer, does this bill in any way go to the role of seniority in layoffs?
Representative Demmer.
I guess, in my opinion, this would not.
Representative Dabney.
I guess we're confounding a number of issues here. The role of seniority in layoffs is stipulated for cities of the first class in state law, and so we're not solving that problem. The issue that Dr. Johnson raises of the struggles of finding qualified teachers or being able to terminate teachers who aren't functioning up to standards isn't impacted by this. There's just a number of issues that we've piled on top of this bill that even the author is indicating don't get touched by this bill. I'm just getting increasingly confused as to what this is about.
I heard mention that this is a complicated issue. And I think being as complicated as it is, it would necessarily involve many things.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Johnson, last year about this time I had the opportunity to meet with about 25 Minneapolis principals who are, at least at that time, were principals in the school district. And two things that I heard, and they were aware of this bill, and two things that I came away with that were, I thought, kind of impressive was, first of all, principals were telling me that the first time they met some of their teachers was when they walked in the door and said, "Hi, I'm your new third grade teacher." They had no opportunity to interview, no opportunity to talk about what might be best for the job. It was just somebody walking in and saying, "Hi, I'm your new teacher." And then also one of the effective results of all the bumping and moving around was that other principals said that they ended up with a school that would have absolutely no tenured teachers. Everybody would be in their first, second, or third year, and no experienced teachers there to really help mentor or any of those kinds of things because of the fact that everybody was getting out of there as fast as they could. And so that impressed upon me the need for something like, if not Demmer's bill as it is, but something like this kind of a bill that would preserve the rights of administrators to have some say in what they were doing. And also, I don't think it's ever good to have a school where it's all senior teachers who've been there for 20 years or all teachers who have been there for less than three. You know, you need some stability in a school, it seems to me. Can you just comment on that? And is that the result? Would you say that is some of the results that you see?
Dr. Johnson.
And you adequately hit hit it on the head. Those, the principles that you met with, that's real. And I don't think I could add any more to that because you said it all right there. It's a fact.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Right. If I could ask now, Ms. Allswager. I'm sorry, we have one more question for you, Dr. Johnson. Representative Peterson. Right. No, I guess not. Ms. Allswager, if you would, please. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a product of the same district Ms. Allswager's from. Probably one of the best school districts in Minnesota, 196. And I really like our superintendent. But this is an issue. You know, I've worked for good superintendents and not so good ones. I've worked for great principals most of the time, not so great ones. I've never worked for Representative Biskin, so he's not, you know, you can't.
And so he
that.
Won't tell you what side of the ledger he'd put me on.
Well, I
couldn't.
Anyway, I was talking to a principal from one of our elementary schools, which, by the way, steals lots of private school students to their school because they're so good. And he said the district he came from, not Minneapolis, but they have a bidding process. They had an excellent special ed teacher. Very good. One of the best he's had, I guess. And this teacher's friend in a different elementary school told her of an opening, and so she bid on it and got it. So now she's teaching first grade or one of those one through three someplace. Mm-hmm. Terrible. He said this teacher was not good in the classroom. She was fantastic in the special ed people, but she could not handle a classroom, and it was really affecting the students. And that's a case where that bidding process, I think, is not so hot. But, I mean, we're talking about, I'll steal a word from Representative Blatz, some superintendents are dictators. We were talking about business, but same thing. And some superintendents are managers and like to cooperate with their folks. But Dr. Nelson spoke a lot about principal. She kept saying principal, principal, principal. In our district, where I came from, where we came from, that's how it works. The principals have total control who comes in their building. Now, I understand there's crisis situations where maybe a teacher has to be placed elsewhere because of declining enrollment. But even then, our district's pretty good about asking who wants to go first. And then if nobody wants to go, then the little person goes. But nobody's going to lose their job because of seniority, unless they're not so senior. But the problem that Minneapolis has with the bidding process, and maybe you can answer this, how do you address that problem I just spoke of where the special ed teacher should not have been in that classroom? Representative Sikora mentioned about the principal said, oh, hello, who are you? Oh, you're my new teacher. Never met them before. But my gut feeling is I'm a local control person. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take anything away from the principals. Our superintendent would always let the principal decide, but maybe another one won't. I don't want a dictatorship. Also, those school boards who allowed the bidding process to happen, I think, have to fix it. That's a local problem. I don't know if it's the state's job to go in and fix 15 school districts' problems when their school board allowed it to happen to begin with. And so my second question is, does Ed Minnesota or does the union, do they acknowledge the fact that things like this happen? The wrong fit example. What are they doing to make sure that, hey, maybe we should change this? Let's look at that bidding process and maybe, or some other process that's not working so well. is there any movement to say, hey, teachers, listen up. You've got a bad deal going here. Let's change it. But I'd rather see it happen at the local level. If they don't want to fix it, they have to live with it. Not let the state get involved. That's my take. But there's two questions there, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, I think you've asked some excellent questions. And the first question, I think, probably is better answered by Ms. Hermanson. But I would answer initially that, as we stated, this is complex. And I didn't get into all of the complexities, and I'm not going to here now. But this bill is a simple fix to a complex problem. The problems that you're talking about are exactly what Representative Dabney was hitting on. There's issues with seniority, layoff, and transfer. There are two different statutes that we haven't even begun to discuss here yet, and this bill is a simple fix that really won't help. Superintendent Williams gave an excellent argument about why you need agreements. He said it works. He has an agreement. If you pass this bill, he could no longer have that agreement. It would be solely on the superintendent's shoulders to make those decisions. Does it, and you asked about, does it work? Are there problems? Certainly. Anytime you come up with an agreement, not everything is going to work out perfectly. But that's why you continue to address the issues. You can bargain it again, you can discuss it again between the school board and the teachers and fix it and hopefully get it right. But you know there will always be other issues that come up. So what did Education Minnesota do? We talked with Minneapolis and other teachers, we've talked to some representatives, and we do have a fix. The fix is not this bill. Because we believe, too, that if there are some problems, it should be locally negotiated. And I will now, if it's okay with the chair, defer this other question to my colleague, Ms. Hermanson, because she can better answer more about what that fix is. And it's all about agreements and being locally negotiated.
Thank you, Ms. Allsweiger. Members, just as you're looking at the clock in front of us, I do plan to vote on this bill by 9:50. Representative Mariani has told us that his bill won't be all that long, so that we don't have to come back after session. All right. I do plan on bringing this to a vote in about 15 minutes. So, Ms. Hermanson, if you could be brief, please.
Yeah, I will, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Wardlow, and Representative Sikora, I'd like to answer their questions. In relation to Minneapolis right now, we have very few non-tenured teachers, probationary teachers, because of the layoffs. And so the ones we do have are those in licensure area where we have, you know, there's no other ones around, but most of our probationary people are gone. In relationship to the teachers that are maybe not the best fixer, we've heard some discussion about the confidence. The union has taken a very proactive role in removing teachers who should not be in the classroom. We took a lead in developing IEP for teachers, a professional development plan, and urging the evaluation and the assessment of the teachers' capabilities. There have been more teachers removed from the classroom and from teaching under this peer review process that we help initiate and pursue than there were in the years before. And we will continue to work to maintain the most competent teachers. It's hard for us to always know. The principals have a responsibility to evaluate and review the teacher's competence and either work with the teacher to improve the skills or work through a process to help them choose another profession. And we will hold their hand in doing so. I think the late placement of teachers, if you read through the document I handed out, the bidding process only goes to the end of June, and I said we're trying to work on an agreement that even moves it up earlier. Part of what happened last year was some of the teachers were gone, and that may have created some delays over the summer or whatever. We're trying to have this done before the end of the year, but after that, it's up to the school district to place teachers. And if you look at the back side of the sheet, the superintendent has the authority, and she or there is a priority among the district in how they place those teachers. And so we're not sure why a principal has a teacher show up at the door that they've never met before. We have not condone that or put that as part of the bidding, this bidding process, so I can't answer that question, but fundamentally we don't think that's a good practice either. And as we put together our process, we encourage the interviewing by the school site and that the principal and the team of teachers help select the staff for their building.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to concur with the concerns that Representative Wardlow raised, but to identify why I, in fact, support the bill. The common scenario here is that more regulation begets more regulation. Mandates create more mandates. We've heard the PELRA mentioned in this discussion, and we've heard concerns for local control. And while, like many of you, I do not know all of the ins and outs of PELRA, but there's a lot of mandates there. And with regard to this whole environment, I think part of the complexity is a lot of the mandates. And I think that's very much why this bill is before us and why we need it, because a lot of those mandates, I think, are driving what brings this bill to us and creating that complex environment. And the reason I believe that's occurring is the evidence that we've heard in testimony with regard to a good line of authority, a good structure of authority. Most of us, I hope, come from a good, strong family background where we grow up and we learn about a structure of authority. If we don't, I hope we've gone to the military and have learned the good, strong structure of authority that creates a really good, vibrant, cohesive, functioning, well-functioning society. This is what everyone needs to learn in school. Students need to learn this in school. Teachers need to experience this in school. This needs to be everywhere in our culture in order to have a good, well-functioning culture. This appears to be the problem that I believe Representative Demmer is trying to address is a problem of a reversal in that structure of authority, and I would certainly hope we could support his bill in reestablishing a good structure of authority.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've been moving in this committee from, we've talked a lot about local control and even site control. And as we move to charter schools, we move to looking at schools having more autonomy. It seems to me that there might be some conflicts in the future. I'm thinking of a site-based school that might decide that the teachers in a team want to choose the teacher who comes into their school. And, you know, under local negotiated contracts, there might be a school that would seek that kind of autonomy. Would this bill then prohibit that sort of structure? They might choose not to even have a principal. I mean, there could be other structures, and there have been, for schools that determine they want to do something different. Or the role of the principal might be different. So would this prohibit any new structures in the future that would really deal with kind of site-based decision-making or local site control? That's one of my questions. I have two questions.
Representative Peterson, are either of those questions to Ms. Allsweiger or Ms. Herman?
Mr. Demmer.
Okay, so, but your follow-up question?
I was curious.
Would that be to Representative Demmer also?
No, that would be to Ms. Allsweiger.
Okay, why don't we ask Ms. Allsweiger first, and then the rest of my questions here are to the author, so then we'll let the ladies go back to the table, and then we'll have questions for the author. So if you'd ask Ms. Allsweiger your question at
okay,
this time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd ask Ms. Allsweiger, one of the, actually it was the parent from Minneapolis, referenced a House File 1180. As a partial solution or a solution to this issue, and she was pleading for us not to vote for this bill. So do you have any idea what that House file would be or what that's about?
Ms. Holzweiger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, yes. It's the issue that I started talking about, that this is a complex issue. There are two different things being discussed here. And there is another bill that would allow Minneapolis and St. Paul and Duluth the ability to negotiate the issues, the problems that you're talking about now. In state law, they are not allowed to do that. And this gets to the issue as to why we're having this problem, because there isn't an agreement at the local level. this bill would allow an agreement rather than relying on what the current state statute that tells them how they have to do something. So it would be, I think it would be wise if we spent our time discussing that issue, and so they could, Minneapolis, the district, and the representatives from the district and the teachers could address that issue on their own and see how well they come up with an answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hermanson, Ms. Allswager. Questions to the author? Right. We have... I'm sorry, Representative Sikora, was yours to one of these ladies? Oh, I'm sorry, ladies, come back. I didn't have you, witness to the author. Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Chair Biskins. I'll try not to take long. You know, the other day, my bill, the quality comp bill, and I know that that's going on in some of your schools, and, you know, principals are putting their teams together to be masters and mentors and, you know, work with their cluster groups. So how does the whole bumping, bidding thing work with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cora, under transfer and reassignment, there technically is no bumping. There have to be open spots that teachers can request to be interviewed for and be placed in. One of the reasons the other bill that Ms. Allswager talked about, there will be, besides the other issues that Minneapolis has had, one of the reasons we would like to see the passage of this other bill is it gives us the opportunity under strict seniority, under the tenure law, and there's a Supreme Court decision that says you, that lays out how it has to be implemented, and that's why we're limited until we change the law. We have the ability to bypass some of these issues and reach an agreement with the district if we can negotiate it. Currently, we cannot. And so we are seeking that other bill in order to provide us greater flexibility as we get into this layoff mentality. How can we adjust what happens there with what the needs of the district are and maybe some of the programming? So we are concerned, as we've done TAP and QCOMP, we've got a cadre of teachers who have voted to do this, and fundamentally we'd like to keep some of them together, but at this point, as we do some layoff and some of that, the seniority under that law is sacrosanct. You have to follow strict seniority in all of your layoffs.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sikora.
Okay, let me be more clear. I understand I'm on the other bill, so I understand this whole thing about trying to renegotiate it so you can do something better. I understand that. What I'm trying to get to is in the buildings that have chosen to do the QCOMP program, you know, how is that going to work? Does it mean that by next year, three or four of those teachers that are being trained at this point are out of there and in a different building? I want to know, you know, are the principals being able to kind of put together a team that can work with this like they might be able to do in a Waseca that we saw, which is, you know, a smaller area, and I would say there's probably a little more stability.
Ms. Herman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sikora, under, again, the realignment process, unless a teacher leaves the building, those teams stay intact. Under the layoff process, which is the other bill, if they're the least senior teacher, and the district continues to make layoffs as they put together the teachers that have to be accessed or the positions that have to be accessed, unless there's some ability for the district to negotiate, that teacher goes, even though they've been part of this team. And that's why this other bill tends to be more important for us at this point, that we need to have some flexibility to do some negotiating in that area.
Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sikora, I think you hit on a classic example about why discussions between the school board administration and the teachers are critical. The Waseca and Minneapolis teachers have said that buy-in into TAP and alternative compensation is very important. And in order to do that, you need to problem solve. The teachers are going to want to do what works best. And by having those discussions and coming up with an agreement, you can have an agreement that is different at various sites. You don't have to paint the whole district with a broad brush. But by bringing people together, you can figure out what works best, whether it's QCOMP, declining enrollment issues, or whatever, in relationship to transfer and other issues.
All right. Thank you. Members... at the risk of being accused of something I've never been accused of before, and that is Ms. Allswager said it'd be wise of us to talk about another bill before this one, and I think that's probably appropriate, and not that I'm wise, but we do have that other piece of legislation, I believe Representative Davenport, that's your bill. We will be discussing that. It also sounds like Minneapolis is working through some issues. At this time, I'm going to lay this bill over for future consideration. Representative Mariani, and as you're coming up, Representative Heidkirchen.
To that point, Mr. Chair, and the bill goes beyond Minneapolis. When you look at the bill, it can address, I've got a school district, for example, Cyrus is a magnet school district. It has an agreement with the superintendent of Minnewaska to come in for about a fourth of the day a week. That superintendent has an agreement not to interfere with the board's decisions. It goes beyond that rural Minnesota where you have superintendents who come in for one day a week. So it goes beyond that, and Representative Eastland just presented a bill that could create problems when you get three different school districts getting together, that one superintendent could become the superintendent of all those districts. You can move one teacher 75 miles down the road. So, I mean, there's a lot of things there that needs to be discussed, so I didn't bring it up. I thought it should be brought to the table. So.
Thank you, Representative Heidkirchen. And there may be an opportunity that this bill does come back, and at that time we'll have that extensive discussion also. Representative O'Mariani, first off, Representative O'Mariani, welcome to the committee, members. A box of cookies are going around, compliments of Representative O'Mariani. Welcome. Please move your bill, sir.
Mr. Chair, I had a cheery morning to all of you. Mr. Chair, I would move House File Number 1364. We recommend it to pass. I don't know that it needs to go anywhere else. I think it just would go straight to the floor.
Representative Mariana moves that House File 1364 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that bribery is, in fact, an effective tool, and so you see my feeble attempt before you to bribe you with this highly controversial bill. Mr. Chair and members, House File 1364 is permissive language that allows cities of the first class to negotiate a probationary period for persons moving from assistant principal status to full principal status. And obviously one of the issues here has to do with whether or not previous tenure would somehow interfere with that. Members, a few years ago we passed similar language for persons moving from teacher status to principal status for cities of the first class. And I don't need to tell members of this committee that at each level these are pretty different jobs, obviously, a classroom teacher being assistant principal or a principal, and that a responsible evaluation of how a person does with each one of these unique responsibilities should not be totally precluded by other matters, including previous tenure at another level. This language, as I said, is permissive. It basically trusts that the school board and the local representative of the principals agree with this and create a responsible way to best evaluate new principals so that they can be successful. Mr. Chair, that's pretty much it. I have Ms. Mary Gilbert here from St. Paul Schools. If we have any questions.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mariani. Members, to the author, do we have any questions? Seeing none, Representative Mariani, cookies must be the trick. Members will take notes. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, I think this makes some sense. Is there a reason why we wouldn't want to make this for other school districts also?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, you don't have a cookie. Get the man a cookie.
Do I have a page to run over an emergency cookie?
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I missed something. But,
Representative Demmer. Representative Mariani, to Representative Demmer's question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, it may be. We do have separate, tenure laws in regards to cities of the first class, and I'm not in a position to speak for the other school districts in this regard.
And maybe council would have an idea? No. Okay.
She needs a cookie, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Guyland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At some point, I would be interested in, this bill is fine, but at some point, I'd be interested in some discussion in this committee of why do the cities of the first class have different tenure laws, and why don't we consider making them the same while we look at Representative Dabney's bill. I would be interested in some broader discussion of that.
All right. Thank you. I think that'd be quite appropriate. All right. Representative Mariani renews his motion that House File 1364 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. Members, in your packet are the minutes from the previous meeting. All right, Representative... Representative Latz moves approval of the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Members, this meeting stands adjourned.